Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading the San Angelo Standard Times for the week of Sunday, January 24th. I'm reading these articles on Thursday, January 28th. I'll begin with the most recent articles. San Angelo COVID-19 testing, a look at local coronavirus data for January, updated January 28th. As of January 28th, City of San Angelo and Tom Green County, 15,562 positive cases reported, 62 new positive tests, 269 deaths, 172 from Tom Green County and 97 from other counties. 63 currently hospitalized, 1,217 active cases. Affidavit states audio tells different story on Christmas Eve shooting, San Angelo man arrested. By Elena Edgen, published January 28. A San Angelo man has been arrested Wednesday, months after a Christmas Eve shooting left one man in the hospital, according to an arrest affidavit. His arrest also stemmed from a search which led to the end of an auto theft ring in Grape Creek on Wednesday afternoon, according to a Tom Green County Sheriff's Office news release. About 6:40 p.m. December 24, 2020, deputies responded to a shots fired call in the 8200 block of Old Sterling City Highway. They discovered a man with a gun and another man lying face down with gunshot wounds, according to the affidavit. Investigators spoke with the suspect, who stated he and a woman walked toward a fire pit, which the injured man had been tending with a rake. The injured man became aggressive and violent toward the woman and swung the rake at them, putting himself between the suspect and woman, records state. The suspect said the man charged at them, so he fired two warning shots in an attempt to stop the man. When he didn't stop, the suspect shot six rounds in quick succession as the man charged, according to the affidavit. The woman told investigators she had asked the man to leave. The man walked between her and the suspect. She stated the man did not charge at them or swing the rake, records state. After the man passed me, I don't know where the rake went, she told investigators. The suspect's actions were a little bit irrational. While at the hospital, the injured man told investigators he was shot during an argument and did not want to pursue charges, according to the affidavit. Investigators found the metal rake just 23 feet away from where the injured man was found, which indicated the rake was not in the area when the shooting began, records state. On January 13, 2021, a woman who lived near the shooting gave investigators surveillance videos. Though the videos did not show the area, the audio revealed clearer details, according to the affidavit. Audio refutes suspect's testimony. At 6:30 p.m., the woman was seen on the video walking from the main trailer toward a fire pit. The man was burning items in the pit. The two argued, and the man cursed after she asked him to leave. A third person, believed to be the suspect, runs out of the trailer, records state. Seconds later, two gunshots rang out and the arguing continued. The woman again tells the man to leave and he says okay. About 2 minutes pass and the audio picked up what sounded like a large item being thrown, believed to be the rake. 3 seconds pass and four gunshots are heard, followed by the man's screams. The suspect was not acting in self-defense or defense of a third person when he used a Rome Industries 25 caliber firearm to assault the man, according to the affidavit. James Rodney Chincheck Porter, 25, was arrested Wednesday on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, no license plate, no proof of financial responsibility, no or expired vehicle registration on a motorcycle, and 12 warrants. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $106,224 bond as of 10 a.m. Thursday, according to online jail records. Grape Creek Auto Theft Ring Ends. law enforcement executed two search warrants in Great Creek on Wednesday, which led to the recovery of 11 stolen vehicles, one stolen utility trailer, and several stolen weapons. Numerous other vehicles were seized during the warrant and are also believed to be stolen, according to the release. Officials stated many of the vehicles had been taken from public parking lots or adjacent to public roadways after being abandoned due to mechanical failures. This left some vehicle owners to believe their vehicle was towed. People who believe their vehicle may have been taken by the group should contact the Tom Green County Sheriff's Office at 325-655-8111. Additional arrests and charges are pending from their investigation, according to the release. Affidavit states, San Angelo man returns to jail after second teen reports sexual assault, by Elena Edgen, published January 28th. For the second time in as many weeks, a San Angelo man returned to jail Thursday after a second teen told police they were raped, according to an arrest affidavit released Thursday. On January 21st, 2021, a person told police a 16-year-old had been raped by the man in November 2019. The assault occurred at the residence of the man, who was 19 at the time. The man told officers the incident occurred November 8, 2019. This information came 2 weeks after a 15-year-old reported a sexual assault in January 2020. Ethan Dane Elliott, 20, was arrested Thursday on suspicion of sexual assault of a child. He was released from Tom Green County Detention Center on a $100,000 bond hours later, according to online jail records. Affidavit states, Abilene Good Samaritan helps homeless Great Creek man loses vehicle, by Elena Egan, published January 27th. A Great Creek man has been arrested months after receipts showed a stolen Abilene credit card was used to buy eyeglasses, according to an arrest affidavit released Wednesday. On October 15, 2020, police located a black 2013 Ford F-150 abandoned in the 100 block of West 24th Street. The vehicle had been reported stolen in Abilene, records state. The Abilene man came to San Angelo to retrieve his vehicle and spoke to police. The man told officers he met the suspect in Abilene at a store. The suspect told him he was hungry, homeless, and wanted Whataburger. The man took him to Whataburger and let the suspect sleep on his couch. When he woke up the next day, the suspect and Ford were gone, according to the affidavit. An investigation revealed the man's credit card had been used at several San Angelo businesses, including an eye doctor and eyeglasses store in the 4500 block of Sherwood Way. Receipts and account information showed the suspect used the card there on September 25th and spent $344.85, records state. John Clayton Montgomery, 21, was arrested Tuesday on suspicion of credit card abuse. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $7,500 bond as of 2:45 p.m. Wednesday, according to online jail records. Wearable art. San Angelo woman creates handcrafted, lightweight jewelry from clay, by Rosanna Frere, published January 28th. Inside the home of Jasmine Kaufman, in a spare room, she sits in her shop, lit only by sunlight shining through the blinds. There she rolls out clay, lays it on a sheet pan, and shapes it into various designs before walking them to her kitchen oven. Once the oven timer alerts, she walks the pan back to her office. Her two cats relax on the carpet underneath the desk while she carefully attaches metal jewelry hardware. "I call it wearable art because I create all of these by hand," Kaufman said. "I mix the colors, roll all of them out, package them. I'm a one-man show." Kaufman has been making the jewelry for Jasmine's Gems since August 2020, after her ceramics hobby turned into a business. Kaufman moved to San Angelo in June 2020 from Florida, since her husband was stationed at Goodfellow Air Force Base. It's been challenging getting into the community since I don't know anyone, but I am putting myself out there and branding myself, she said. Kaufman attends pop-up shops around town, but mainly sells on her Etsy page. Kaufman took time recently to answer questions about her business. Why did you choose this business path? Honestly, I feel like the path chose me. I never considered myself to be creative, nor do I wear jewelry all that much. I started playing around, making little trinket dishes and necklaces, and the next thing you know, I was surrounded by hundreds of clay jewelry items. It all fell into my lap, but I am so happy it did. I find such joy in seeing people wearing my art. Where do you see your business in the next year? 5 years, 10 years. My business goals for the next couple of years would be to hold a permanent spot in a local boutique or coffee shop for everyone local to San Angelo. For online retail, my goal is to have my own website. Best business advice you've received? Stay true to your brand. It's very easy to adapt to the seller. Your people will find you. It is a very hard thing to maintain, but if you stay true to yourself, success will follow. What should make your business stand out? Quality of the items you are producing. There might be 10 other handmade jewelry suppliers in the area, but if you pride yourself in your work, customers will always come back. What are the biggest issues for running this business? Exposure while handling COVID restrictions. I just moved here from Florida about 6 months ago, and it has been very difficult getting my name out around town. Finding balance between keeping my family safe and exposing my business has been tough. For more information or to buy jewelry, visit Jasmine's Gems Facebook page or email Jasmine's, J-A-S-M-I-N-E-S, Gem, G-E-M, Creations at gmail.com. Houston women indicted for smuggling undocumented immigrants through Tom Green County by Elena Edgen, published January 27th. Two Houston women have been indicted after a traffic stop led to the discovery of three undocumented immigrants, according to court documents released Tuesday. About 4:48 p.m. November 1st, 2020, a Texas Department of Public Safety trooper was on patrol near mile marker 482 on U.S. Highway 87 in Tom Green County. He noted a white Chrysler van speeding at 82 miles per hour in a 75 mile per hour zone, record state. The trooper conducted a traffic stop and observed numerous signs of human smuggling indicators, which included sunscreen devices on all passenger side windows. There were also three people in the back seat, later identified as undocumented immigrants, record state. The undocumented immigrants told investigators they paid approximately $1,000 to the women for transport, according to court documents. Gloria Raquel Manzanares, a passenger, was arrested November 1st on suspicion of smuggling of persons and possession of marijuana. She was released from Tom Green County Detention Center on a $51,000 bond the next day, according to online jail records. Noemi Olguin Herrera, the driver, was arrested November 1st on suspicion of smuggling of persons. She was released from Tom Green County Detention Center on a $50,000 bond the next day, according to online jail records. The indictments charged both women with smuggling of persons. This is a third-degree felony, punishable by up to 10 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Indictment. San Angelo man sent sexual photos to undercover agent posing as child, by Elena Edgen, published January 27th. A San Angelo man has been indicted 3 months after an undercover agent, posing as a 15-year-old girl, received a message to meet up with a man for a sexual encounter, record state. On November 5th, 2020, a Texas Department of Public Safety special agent went undercover as a 15-year-old girl online. A man contacted the agent and expressed interest in the child, according to court documents. The next day, The man overtly acted on his intent to have sexual contact with the child by going to a prearranged location at a prearranged time. When he arrived, he was detained by law enforcement, records state. He told investigators he was going to meet a child, and investigation revealed he had sent the agent an inappropriate photo, according to court documents. Corey James Scott, 33, was arrested November 6th on suspicion of online solicitation of a minor and a warrant. He was released December 14th on a $50,000 bond, according to online jail records. An indictment filed in January charged him with online solicitation of a minor. This is a third-degree felony, punishable by up to 10 years in jail, and a fine not to exceed $10,000. A court date has been scheduled for February, according to online court records. San Angelo man arrested in fatal crash, previously sentenced in serious vehicle accident, published January 26th. A San Angelo man has been arrested after a multi-vehicle crash ended a woman's life and injured two others, and this isn't the first time he's been involved in a serious crash, according to court documents. About 4:40 p.m., Monday, January 25th, 2021, police responded to a major crash involving multiple vehicles in the intersection of East 19th and North Chadburn Streets. Just before 5 p.m., police asked drivers to avoid the area in a Nixle alert. At least one vehicle caught fire, and a Ford pickup was seen flipped on its roof. Nearby, trees were snapped from their bases and bushes were shredded. A street lamp lay on the ground after a vehicle barreled through it. A patrol officer observed a southbound pickup speeding on Chadburn Street and turned around to make a traffic stop, according to Tracy Piet Fox, public information officer for the San Angelo Police Department. By the time the officer could safely turn and attempt to catch up to the pickup, the crash occurred. A black Dodge Durango was stopped at the intersection, waiting to make a turn onto 19th Street. The pickup struck it, forcing it to turn around, according to Piet Fox. Two women, 62 and 60, were transported to an area hospital with non-incapacitating injuries. The pickup continued and struck a white Ford Escape, which had stopped in the northbound lane of North Chadburn Street at the intersection. The crash sent it back 75 yards until it struck a tree. The Escape's driver, 38-year-old Christine N. Rodriguez, was unconscious with incapacitating injuries. She later died from her injuries. The pickup then rolled several times before landing on its roof. The undercarriage of the pickup caught fire, which was put out by an officer. The driver was transported to the hospital with incapacitating injuries. After the pickup's driver was released from the hospital, police interviewed him. The man told officers he was possibly driving twice the speed limit or faster. The speed limit is 35 miles per hour in that area. He noticed the patrol unit began to follow him, so he accelerated faster in an attempt to get away and wanted to go home, according to the arrest affidavit. Stephen Christian Barros, 32, was arrested Monday on suspicion of evading arrest, detention, causing death, and possession of a controlled substance. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center with no bond listed as of 8:45 a.m. Tuesday. This is not the first vehicle crash in which Barros was driving that resulted in serious injuries. On May 29, 2010, police responded to an accident with an injured passenger in the 800 block of East 21st Street. An investigation revealed a black 2007 Chevrolet pickup had driven eastbound when it lost control and left the roadway, records state. The vehicle stopped on its passenger side. After a passenger was transported to the hospital, the passenger named the driver who had fled the crash, according to an arrest affidavit. The passenger had extensive injuries to their left leg that required immediate surgery. He had further treatment in Dallas, records state. Witnesses in the area stated Barros, the driver, asked them not to call police and tried to free the passenger. As sirens came closer, Barros fled east toward Main Street, records state. Officers attempted to locate Barros at his family's home when his mother received a call. During the call, he told her to say he was in Odessa and the vehicle was stolen. Further investigation revealed Barros had been hiding in San Angelo. Barros went to the police department and told officers he was driving and fled the crash. An officer noted she could smell alcohol on him. On November 21, 2011, Barros pleaded guilty to accident involving injury, a third-degree felony punishable by up to 10 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. The 51st District Judge, Barbara Walther, sentenced him to 6 years deferred adjudication, a type of probation that helped him avoid conviction. He also had to pay a $750 fine and $5,445.30 in restitution. He followed the terms of his probation, and the case was disposed in 2017, according to court documents. Affidavit states San Angelo man broke into home, assaulted woman holding child. By Elena Edgen, published January 27th. A San Angelo man has been arrested 3 months after a window was broken and a woman assaulted, according to an arrest affidavit released Wednesday. On November 4th, 2020, police responded to the 200 block of West 1st Street. An officer noted a bedroom window shattered and learned a woman had been assaulted, records state. The woman's shirt was torn. She told officers the father of her two children, who did not live with them, attempted to kick in a door after she denied him entry. He shattered the bedroom window, entered the residence, and began assaulting her, according to the affidavit. The woman was pushed into a wall, picked up, and thrown to the floor while holding their two-year-old child, the affidavit stated. The child was not injured, records state. Bobby Joe Branch, 30, was arrested Tuesday on suspicion of burglary of a habitation, intend other felony, and six warrants. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $3,942.40 bond as of 9:15 a.m. Wednesday, according to online jail records. Oregon man arrested after state troopers find THC candy and marijuana near San Angelo. By Elena Edgen, published January 26th. An Oregon man has been arrested after a traffic stop revealed 16 pounds of marijuana on Monday, according to a Texas Department of Public Safety news release. About 10:30 p.m., Monday, January 25th, DPS troopers conducted a traffic stop on a Chevrolet pickup heading southbound on U.S. 87. Troopers smelled marijuana, which prompted a probable cause search, according to the release. The search revealed 360 grams of THC, edible candies, and 16 pounds of marijuana hidden throughout the pickup, according to the release. Online judicial records state Joseph Daniel Valdez, 25, was arrested on suspicion of possession of a controlled substance and delivery of marijuana. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $100,000 bond as of 4:45 a.m. Tuesday. Trio indicted in Brixley Marie Lee's death. Mother had past experience with CPS. By Rosanna Frere and Elena Edgen, published January 26th. The family of Brixley Marie Lee, an infant who died after testing positive for heroin, has been indicted in her death, according to documents released Tuesday. Court documents also show the two-month-old's mother, Destiny Cheyenne Harbor, had a history with CPS, including a child being removed from her care. There were no prior reports about this newborn baby, said Paul Zimmerman, media specialist with the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services. He did confirm the family has been investigated in the past related to another infant. The first child had been removed from the family's care, records state. According to court documents, the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services got involved with Harbor in 2018 over the care of a two-month-old boy. On December 27, 2018, the department filed an order for protection of a child in an emergency. The two-month-old was placed in a foster home with a temporary visitation plan for the parents. A status hearing February 25, 2019, listed Harbor as the mother and another man as the father. The court advised both parents their custodial and parental rights and duties were subject to restriction or termination unless they were willing and able to provide the child with a safe environment. Harbor completed an alcohol and drug abuse council assessment, and substance abuse treatment was recommended, but stopped going in February 2019. Harbor was reportedly living with relatives who were substance abusers. She was positive for heroin March 14, 2019, and admitted she was using narcotics as of May 29, 2019. Harbor tested positive for heroin on a hair follicle test on July 26, 2019. Court documents state the father had ongoing substance abuse issues and also did an assessment, which recommended treatment, but that he had not gone. Harbor had not visited the child since October 2019. The father made his monthly visits, which were reduced to one time per month due to repeated no-shows and cancellations. The department had not identified any appropriate relative placements willing to take the child in February 2020. At a bench trial via Zoom, the parents' rights to the child were terminated on April 5, 2020. The decision was made after evidence showed the mother and father constructively abandoned the child, records state. The department made efforts to return the child to the parents, who had not regularly visited or maintained significant contact with the child. The two demonstrated an inability to provide the child with a safe environment, court documents stated. The court finds by clear and convincing evidence that appointment of the parents as a managing conservator of the child would not be in the best interest of the child and would significantly impair the physical and emotional development of the child. As of summer 2020, the department reported the child continues to do well in the current foster home placement, where the child has been placed since shortly after birth in late 2018. The child continued to receive services through early childhood intervention, which included speech and language therapy. What led to Brixley Marie Lee's death? Brixley Marie Lee was born in late August 2020 at home without medical care. Kristen Chanel Bradley, her grandmother, and Smock, Bradley's boyfriend, assisted in the birth, which included tying off the umbilical cord with a shoelace, records show. Brixley did not get medical care until she was found unconscious and not breathing at a residence in the 2200 block of Webster Avenue about 1:20 a.m. November 7, 2020. Smock and Bradley told investigators they went to brush their teeth. When they returned, Brixley was unconscious and not breathing on the bed. Smock called police, stating he gave the infant a baby formula and she may have had an allergic reaction, records state. An officer performed CPR on Brixley, who was blue by the time they arrived at the hospital. Investigation revealed she had never gone to the hospital. The doctor who treated Brixley told detectives they observed injection sites on the infant's hand, arm, and head and tested positive for opiates, heroin, in the infant's urine, according to court documents and police. Brixley was transported to Cook Children's Health System in Fort Worth due to the severity of her medical condition. Despite being on life support, she died on November 10th, records state. Investigation reveals history, home care, and substance abuse. On November 7th, a detective at the home noted children's Tylenol, a stethoscope, blood pressure cup, tweezers, and what he believed to be a blood glucose monitoring device among a clutter of personal items. Smock mentioned to officers he gave the child Tylenol, Motrin, and a gas medication. Bradley stated Brixley had colic, so she had been adding corn syrup to the infant's formula. The home had drug paraphernalia and suspected heroin, methamphetamine, marijuana, and pills, according to a police news release. The trio was arrested that night on suspicion of injury to a child with intentional serious bodily injury. They were indicted on those charges Tuesday, January 26, 2021. This is a first-degree felony punishable by 5 to 99 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Attorneys defending woman accused in infant's death seek judge's removal, get denied, by Elena Edgen, published January 26th. An out-of-county judge has denied a motion to remove a judge from a case involving a San Angelo woman charged in her infant's death. Her defense team made the motion partially due to them not being paid by the court, records state. Judge Timothy D. Yeats of the 118th Judicial District, who usually handles cases in Howard, Glasscock, and Martin counties, presided over the motion hearing. Leslie Moreno Fernandez's defense motioned to recuse 391st District Court Judge Brad Goodwin from the case. In two motions, attorneys Jenny Henley and Evan Pierce Jones state they have not been paid since June 2020. Their requests for an additional attorney and a new mitigation specialist have not been addressed, according to the motions. Judge Goodwin has in essence defunded the defense in a death penalty capital murder case, the motion to recuse stated. This is a denial of due process in multiple respects. Judge Goodwin's lack of impartiality and bias against either the defendant or mothers charged with the murder of their children is borne out by his course of conduct outlined above. Part of the arguments included co-defendant Andrew Fernandez's attorneys, who are paid by salary through the Regional Public Defender's Office for capital cases. They do not need to get the court's approval for payments or additional staff. Leslie Fernandez's attorneys are supposed to be paid hourly by the county and require the court's approval, along with their private investigator. After reviewing evidence Friday, Yeats adjourned the hearing to further review the information. They reconvened Monday at 3:30 p.m., where final arguments were heard and a decision made. Any professional needs the tools of his or her trade in order to perform his or her work, Pierce Jones said. We got into battle in this case unarmed. That is solely because of Judge Goodwin's conduct. We tried multiple times, multiple ways for our funding requests, and they've fallen on deaf ears. Pierce Jones listed several cases and reasons Goodwin could have been recused. Despite his arguments, the state remained unmoved. I understand their plight. I sympathize, but I don't believe recusal is appropriate, said Allison Palmer, 51st District Attorney. Yeats agreed with the state and denied the motion around 4:15 p.m. Monday, January 25th. When asked about why appointed attorneys may not get funding, Palmer stated there could be a lot of reasons. Judges decide if the defense requests are reasonable, necessary, and if the funding is being used responsibly. Another consideration is the request and being a good steward of taxpayer dollars when releasing those funds. If a judge denies payment, it could be for a lot of reasons, including the overall consideration of trying to be responsible with taxpayer dollars, Palmer said. What judges consider when releasing funds is whether they believe the defense requests are reasonable and necessary for the case, and whether the judge believes the defense is spending funds responsibly and balance that with being a good steward of taxpayer dollars when releasing those funds, Palmer explained. The state of Texas versus Andrew Fernandez and Leslie Moreno Fernandez. 3 months shy of his second birthday, Nathan Quezada was found unconscious in a home in the 2600 block of Junius Street around 5:35 a.m. March 8, 2018. His stepfather, Andrew Fernandez, told investigators he found Quezada in his crib taking short breaths. He called 911 and started CPR until medics arrived. I acted to protect my son, he said in an earlier interview with the Standard Times. Who wouldn't try saving their kid? We love our kids and we are innocent. Quezada died in the hospital from multiple vertebral fractures due to blunt impact trauma, which happened at different times, according to the autopsy. His injuries included 3 vertebral fractures in his mid and lower back, swelling in his brain, bleeding near his spine, bruises, and a previously healed fracture in his left leg, records state. He had developmental delays with motor and language skills. The toddler met with early childhood intervention services 3 times a week, the last time on March 5th. The checkup revealed Quezada was not gaining weight or height, Andrew Fernandez said. A pediatric radiologist suggested Quezada had osteopenia, or low bone density. Due to this, police did not have probable cause to charge the couple with abuse, according to testimony from San Angelo detective Roger Spearman on February 25th. Quezada did not have brittle bone or osteopenia, Spearman said. My doubt is that the child was able to break his leg on his own. Police arrested Andrew and Leslie Moreno Fernandez on suspicion of capital murder of a child younger than 10 years old, a first-degree felony charge punishable by 5 to 99 years or death. Leslie Fernandez appeared in court in February 2020 in hopes of reducing her $1 million bond, which was denied. Her attorney, Jenny Henley, has made several motions, including that the court ruled the death penalty illegal. In September 2020, Andrew Fernandez attempted to have his bond lowered. Despite a COVID-19 diagnosis, the reduction was denied 2 months later. The state is pursuing the death penalty in his case. Standard Times news director bids farewell to San Angelo, accepts position with Indy Star, by John Tufts, published January 26th. San Angelo Standard Times news director Jennifer Guadarrama is bidding her farewell to San Angelo after accepting a position with the Indy Star in Indianapolis, part of the USA Today network. Guadarrama has served as Standard Times news director in San Angelo since May 2017. During her tenure, she focused the Standard Times on digital storytelling, bringing more locally driven articles into the smartphones and mobile devices of those living in the Concho Valley. When Jen first came on board, we honestly still had a lot to learn about how to reach readers online, Deputy Editor Paul Harris said. I give her a ton of credit for making that transition possible. Not every newsroom has been able to do that successfully, and I don't know where we'd be without her help. There's no doubt we're in a much better place now than when she arrived, he said. Guadarrama challenged the reporting staff to think beyond the press release and how stories impact San Angelo residents. I became a journalist because I wanted to make the world, my world, the community I live in, a better place, Guadarrama often told staff. She both encouraged and expected Standard Times reporters to do the same. They took her words to heart. Here are just some of the highlights. A better place for the elderly and vulnerable. After a tornado left a swath of destruction through San Angelo in May 2019, many residents expressed concern for the city's elderly population who may not have been able to receive alerts on a mobile phone. Guadarrama forged a partnership between the Standard Times, Fox West Texas, and Meals for the Elderly to purchase and distribute NOAA weather radios for residents unable to receive severe weather alerts. Her efforts led to about 150 NOAA weather radios donated and delivered to some of San Angelo's most vulnerable residents. Guadarrama said part of what makes San Angelo a special place is how often the community rallies toward good causes. People in San Angelo love to cheer each other on. They love to support each other, and they have each other's backs, Guadarrama said. It was refreshing moving here and finding out that was the dynamic. A better place for pets. In September 2019, reporter Elena Edgen investigated reports of dogs being dumped near Sonora. Her coverage, at the direction of Guadarrama, helped people match the West Texas dogs to an Atascosa County Animal Control Shelter, more than 200 miles southeast of the dumping sites. Law enforcement investigated and stopped a Pleasanton couple who were dumping the dogs on I-10. The couple were later sentenced. The dogs have since been rehomed, and organizations have implemented change. A role of journalism is to see a problem and help fix it, Guadarrama said. When we do reporting that requires action on our readers' part, when we expose that need, people come together to fix it. A better place for children. In November 2019, reporter John Tufts investigated concerns voiced by parents living in McCulloch County, who were worried a remote bus stop at the intersection of U.S. Highway 283 and County Road 166 had placed area children in danger. The rural bus stop was the result of a disagreement between two Central Texas school districts, Lawn, and Brady ISD, in which children attending the first grade had to walk a few feet away from semi-trucks passing at speeds up to 75 miles per hour. Guadarrama guided Tufts on his investigation, whose coverage led to public pressure and the removal of the bus stop. Guadarrama encouraged Tufts also to develop a local children's literacy program for San Angelo grade school students. Due to COVID-19, the program has been temporarily shelved, but the Standard Times has since been actively involved in San Angelo ISD's literacy efforts, San Angelo Reads. A better place for local business. Standard Times reporter Rosanna Frere writes stories about local San Angelo businesses consistently every week at the direction of Guadarrama. Well, we want to thank the Standard Times and the young lady that did our story for putting us on the map today, wrote a spokesperson with Fatty's Grill in San Angelo after an article by Frere. Guadarrama has often said small businesses are the lifeblood of a community and pushed Frere to write stories that would give small business owners a boost in the public eye. The many thank yous Frere receives for her dedicated features on San Angelo's local business scene are a testament to Guadarrama's leadership. A better place for documenting change. Between March and July 2020, the United States was swept up in change regarding both public outrage over the death of George Floyd and the coronavirus. Both protest and pandemic found their way to San Angelo, and Guadarrama made sure they were well documented. In May 2020, hundreds of San Angelo residents marched during a Black Lives Matter demonstration, many holding signs demanding justice and racial equality. Guadarrama sent photographer Colin Murphy, who captured a unique moment when a San Angelo police officer shook the hand of a protester near the steps of City Hall. Tufts was the only media person who provided real-time live video coverage using Facebook throughout the entirety of the march. As COVID-19 made its way through San Angelo, Guadarrama made sure residents were as connected to the news as they could be in an increasingly disconnected world. In addition to local coverage, she sent both Murphy and Tufts to rural communities in Crockett and Valverde County to document the impact of COVID-19. Their coverage of how the virus was hammering Del Rio in July 2020 was published online and later printed in USA Today. A legacy of local news. Since May 2017, the chair in the editor's office at the Standard Times has been mostly empty. That's because Guadarrama worked in the bullpen of the newsroom floor alongside her fellow reporters. Guadarrama encouraged her team to be a better force for local journalism. She motivated, coached, and continues to inspire. Her news family in San Angelo will miss her greatly. "I'm going to miss the people who work in the newsroom," Guadarrama said. "They love San Angelo, and it's so obvious they do. They champion what this community has to offer while also being their watchdog." Guadarrama's message to San Angelo is that the newspaper's core mission will remain unchanged in serving the community. "The team here is going to continue to provide stories, photos, and videos that you won't find anywhere else," she said. In February, Guadarrama will continue her crusade of making the world a better place as the breaking news editor at the Indy Star, a newspaper famous for doing just that. In March 2016, the Indy Star published its Out of Balance series, investigating USA Gymnastics' broken policies for handling sexual abuse. Their coverage led to USA Gymnastics coach Larry Nassar sentenced to 40 years to 175 years in prison after he pleaded guilty to 7 counts of first-degree criminal conduct. Her last day in the Standard Times newsroom will be February 12th. She starts in her new role with the Indy Star on February 22nd. City of San Angelo to provide financial relief to small business impacted by COVID, by Rosanna Frere, published January 26th. The City of San Angelo and Tom Green County are partnering with People Fund to provide grants to eligible small businesses impacted by the COVID-19 crisis in San Angelo, according to a news release. The funds will go in the San Angelo Cares Small Business Grant Program from Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Securities Act, CARES. The city designated $750,000 from CARES funding. Tom Green County designated $100,000. Applications will be accepted from February 1st to March 15th. Eligibility and documentation required. Applicant must be registered with the Secretary of State of Texas as a valid business on or before January 1st, 2020. Businesses must be located in Tom Green County. Businesses not located within Tom Green County are not eligible. Applicant shall demonstrate either a total 2020 annual net income under $100,000, but no less than $5,000, or a reduction in revenue of at least 15% since March 2020 that was a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Documentation can include tax returns, financial statements, and other financial and employment data, including IRS Form 941. Application must provide signed IRS W-9 form and a business TIN, EIN, or SSN. Applicant must verify they are not involved in any litigation against the City of San Angelo. Applicant must verify that as of March 2020, they were not in arrears on any existing agreement nor defaulted on a previous agreement with the City of San Angelo. Applicant must verify that they are not debarred, suspended, terminated, or otherwise excluded from or ineligible to transact with the federal, state, or local government entity or agency. Applicant must verify that as of March 2020, they were not delinquent on taxes due to the City of San Angelo. Grants will be awarded by the following: total annual revenue of $0 to $250,000 is eligible for a $5,000 grant. Total annual revenue of $250,000 to $500,000 is eligible for a $10,000 grant. Total annual revenue of $500,000 to $1 million is eligible for a $15,000 grant. Learn more about the program at peoplefund.org/San Angelo. For questions, contact Dave Erickson at 325-942-2098 or david.erickson@angelo.edu. AEP reported a large outage in San Angelo after 50-mile-per-hour wind knocked down transmission line. By Rosanna Frere, published January 25th. AEP Texas crews responded to an outage in North San Angelo that affected nearly 9,500 customers early Monday, January 25th. According to AEP, strong winds at 50 miles per hour knocked down a transmission line outside of the North San Angelo substation and caused the outage serving the Great Creek and Lake Drive substations, according to a Facebook post. Throughout the day, crews were able to restore power to three impacted substations and return electric service to large groups of customers, the Facebook post stated. All outages were restored Monday afternoon. Thank you again for your trust and patience, the Facebook post stated. San Angelo man charged with kidnapping and luring child with candy deemed competent. By Elena Edgen, published January 25th. Nearly 4 months after a San Angelo man was found incompetent, a judge declared him competent to stand trial in a kidnapping and child indecency case Monday. About 10:30 a.m., Monday, January 25th, 2021, Cameron James Simmons attended a hearing to determine if he could stand trial in the May 25th kidnapping when he tried to bribe a child with candy in exchange for sexual contact. After reviewing information, 119th District Court Judge Jay Weatherby declared Simmons competent. The State of Texas versus Cameron Simmons. About 8 p.m., May 25th, 2020, Tom Green County Sheriff's Office deputies responded to the 4,000 block of St. Anthony Road in reference to a report of a possible sexual assault of a child younger than 14 years old. Investigation revealed Simmons, 17 at the time, had abducted and taken a child to a secluded location. He told deputies he did touch the child and asked them to touch him, according to court documents. Simmons stated he attempted to pay the child with money and a bribe of candy, according to arrest records. Simmons was arrested on suspicion of indecency with a child and sexual contact and aggravated kidnapping. An indictment on July 8, 2020, charged him with aggravating kidnapping, sexual abuse, indecency with a child by sexual contact, and indecency with a child by exposure. The kidnapping charge is a first-degree felony, punishable by up to 99 years. Indecency by sexual contact is a second-degree felony, and exposure is a third-degree felony. Annual Family Date Night Dances Postponed in San Angelo by Rosanna Frere, published January 23rd. This year's daddy-daughter, mother-son, and family date night dances in San Angelo will be postponed due to the coronavirus. A new date has not been set as of now, but updates will be forthcoming, the city of San Angelo, which sponsors the event, said in a release. The date nights usually draw 2,400 people during the course of the events, hosted during a week in February. The special evening usually includes a professional photographer, snacks, souvenir table, and, of course, dancing. Chasing health, not running from sickness. New chiropractic clinic opens in San Angelo by Rosanna Frere, published January 22nd. A new chiropractic clinic has opened in San Angelo by a couple with a different model than other clinics. Concho Valley Chiropractic opened on October 1, 2020 at 5114 Knickerbocker Road by husband and wife Dr. James Vleck and Dr. Emily Smith Vleck. Emily, who specializes in promoting a healthy lifestyle for the whole family, is a registered yoga instructor and licensed athletic trainer. James specializes in injury prevention, following his experience in a trauma-based clinic in Dallas. "We're not going to treat everybody the same way," James said. "If I have a little baby come in, care is going to be different for them than maybe an elderly person. We really enjoy working with each person individually to find a fine-tuned care approach." The clinic is open from 9 a.m. to noon and 2 to 6 p.m. on Monday and Wednesday, 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Tuesday and Friday, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Thursday, and by appointment on Saturday. The couple aims to reverse the thinking that chiropractors just crack backs. They want to help people improve their quality of life with chiropractic care. The word chiropractor originates from Greek. "It just means we're practitioners who work with our hands," James said. "So there's something for everybody here, not just back issues." James took time to answer questions about his family's business. What should make your business stand out? "Dr. Emily and I strive to give very personal care to our patients. We know there's lots of chiropractors already in San Angelo, and lots of good ones. It's not speaking negatively against them, but our model is a little bit different than others. The phrase I like to say is chasing health instead of running from illness. We want to work with people, not just because they may have injured their back, but because we want their whole body functioning its best. We really want to help people live to their full potential." Why did you pick San Angelo as a location? "Dr. Emily's family lives here. Both Emily and I are moving back from the Dallas-Fort Worth area, where things are very congested. There's a lot of traffic, it's kind of a rat race, and the clinics we worked in there were very fast-paced. We wanted to move back to a smaller community where we can get plugged in with the community more and have a more personal approach." What's your background? "My background is in biology and chemistry. That's what I did my undergraduate studies in. Then I went to graduate school for chiropractic school. I really like the idea of healthcare that's hands-on. I really like the science side of things and finding a detailed diagnosis and working with people to figure out what their conditions are. Dr. Emily's background is in athletic training. She worked as a licensed athletic trainer for Texas A&M. She's very good on the sports side and how people move. She and I met in grad school, and so we both graduated with our doctorate in 2018. What's the biggest challenge running your business? We really enjoy what we do, and we think we're very good at it. But in the era of coronavirus, it's hard for us to reach out in the community. Since we're relatively new, we want to let people know that we're here. We can't go knock on doors or give health talks and meet face-to-face in the kind of the traditional way that we would like. What motivates you to go to work every morning? The thing that brings me into work is working with people. I really enjoy hearing about people's lives and their stories. Also, just the impact and giving people back different areas in their life as they start doing a lot better. For more information, call 325-617-2865 or go to ConchoValleyCairo.com. San Angelo manslaughter suspect found after police call for public's health, by Elena Edgen, published January 21st. Update: police found and apprehended the suspect, according to a department Facebook post at 3:27 p.m. San Angelo, original story. A San Angelo man has been indicted in the shooting death of an 18-year-old, and police have issued a call for the public's health finding him, according to a San Angelo Police Department Facebook post. Around 10:30 a.m., Thursday, January 21st, police asked for the public's help in finding Nathaniel B. Gonzalez, also known as Nathan Blake Gonzalez. He's 5'8", 115 pounds, with black hair and brown eyes. He has been indicted on suspicion of manslaughter and tampering with evidence in the August 1st, 2020 shooting death of Carlos Galvin, 18. What led to the death of Carlos Galvin? On August 1st, police responded to a shooting victim in the 200 block of Coberlin Street. They found Galvin with a gunshot wound to the stomach area, right of the navel, according to the arrest affidavit. He was taken to Shannon Medical Center, where he was pronounced deceased. A search of the apartment revealed a Glock 17 9mm handgun in a bedroom closet and a bullet slug on a carpet in the bathroom, records state. Gonzalez told officers he had been talking on the phone outside for about 15 minutes when he heard a gunshot. He entered the apartment, found Galvin, and called 911, he told police. He also told officers he saw a black man dressed in black with four to six inch long dreadlocks and a do-rag running from the apartment, according to the affidavit. Video surveillance showed no one fleeing the apartment, records state. In a later interview with Gonzalez, he said Galvin was waving around the Glock and Gonzalez took the gun. Gonzalez pulled the trigger, unaware that it was loaded, he told police. He also stated his statement on the fleeing man was false, according to court documents. Gonzalez was arrested on suspicion of manslaughter and five warrants shortly after 1 a.m. Sunday. He was released from Tom Green County Jail on a $30,000 bond Monday, according to online jail records. And finally, here's our weekly column by Allison Watkins. Prepare for spring by starting plants indoors. Published January 28th. Last year brought new and renewed interest in gardening for many people. Knowing how to grow your own food is a great skill to have and is fun to do. There's a unique satisfaction that comes from serving a meal with ingredients from the garden. When spring arrives, there will be an assortment of vegetable transplants available at nurseries to continue gardening efforts. But now is a good time to plan ahead and start transplants from seeds inside. Starting from seed has several benefits, including a lower expense and more variety. Check out seed displays at local nurseries and garden centers, or try ordering from seed catalogs and see how wide the selection is. Some seeds work well when sowed directly into the planting bed in the springtime, but starting early indoors can increase success. February is a good time of year to start many plants indoors, which allows time to germinate and develop a good root system. Then the transplants will need time to harden off outside before planting. Start with high-quality, fine-textured potting mix, peat moss-based, not garden soil. When dealing with tiny seedlings, it is important to keep everything as clean and sterile as possible, as they are more sensitive and susceptible to diseases and pests. So use fresh potting mix for growing seedlings, not old or reused potting mix. Almost anything that can hold potting mix can be used to start seeds, but again, it needs to be clean. Sterilize pots with 10% bleach solution before starting. Seed starting trays can be purchased at local nurseries and garden centers, or you can improvise with egg cartons, cups, milk cartons, etc. Punch holes in the bottom so that water can drain, and place a tray underneath to catch the excess water. Seeds packets should indicate the optimal germination conditions, but in general, seeds need soil that is damp and warm, but not too hot. An air temperature of about 75 degrees in the day and 65 at night is good. Provide ample light for the seedlings to grow well, and begin transplanting into individual pots after the first true leaves are formed. Allow a strong, deep root system to grow, then harden off outdoors before planting in the landscape or garden. This just means to gradually expose the plants to the elements outside while they are still in their containers. First, place in part shade or filtered light, then into full sun for a period of time, and then in full sun all day for a few days to allow the plant to transition from being grown indoors to planted outdoors. The average last frost in the Concho Valley is around late March, but always keep an eye on the weather. We never know if spring will come early or we will be hit with a surprise late frost. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.